This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue-collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue-collar workers for blue-collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, brought to you by Full Sneak Gear. Check out their entire lineup at fullsneakgear.com. Also, be sure to check out our entire stable of podcasts at sportsmansempire.com. This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries. Outrageously dependable.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
I saw this app.
I got a hit.
In the new limited series, DTF St. Louis, Jason Bateman, David Harbour, and Linda Cardellini star as three suburbanites who spice up their love lives.
Wow.
Don't miss the new HBO original limited series, DTF St. Louis, premiering March 1st on HBO Max.
Spring break isn't what it used to be. It's better. This spring, stay 3 nights and get a $50 Best Western gift card. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Visit bestwestern.com for complete terms and conditions.
Hey guys, before we start, a quick shout out to Alpha Dog Nutrition for sponsoring this podcast. Alpha Dog products are now available at dusupply.com, and you can use code ALPHADOG15 at checkout for 15% off and a credit for free shipping to try it yourself. Now let's get you to your podcast.
Colby, good morning.
Good morning.
Good night for you.
It's a good afternoon here.
Thanks for jumping on. We were talking this morning and I was like, I got to start working now that Jason's
yeah.
quit me.
Yeah.
He's
out there in the bush.
I don't think he is yet. I'm guessing they're still snowed out of that bear camp.
Yeah. I talked to him 2 days ago. He was saying that they were coming in to start clearing the rest of it, that they had gotten half of it out themselves, like cutting trees up and stuff. But that there was a, I think he was saying that it was BLM was going to come in and do some clearing of the roads.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I talked to him at OESDA for a little bit, but I didn't get a lot of time to spend with him. I was busy.
Yeah. You've been on the road quite a bit here as of late, a lot of shows and stuff, a lot of traveling.
Yeah. More than normal. It's like my busy travel time. I had some business meetings and then I went to, there's a, it's, I don't know if it's Western Wildlife Association or whatever. It's big. It's basically a bunch of different groups of, wildlife agencies that get together and they have this, mountain lion, I think they call it a workshop or something. And so every 3 years they have they gather and everybody, you know, you can present different studies and stuff that you've done and what your state is doing. And so a couple of us wanted to go to that and attend that.
How'd that go?
It was good. It was, we weren't sure what we were going to be getting into. You know, it was, basically we were just like, you know what, we need to get out in front of people. And our goal is to get hounds represented in the science. You know what I mean? So like we all know that you just can't do mountain lion science without hounds. And so we've got to be a little bit more proactive, I think, in assuming that role as the experts or whatever. And so we weren't sure what we were getting into, but we signed on as a exhibiting sponsor, so we have a little table there and you know, we had some pictures of hounds and cougars and stuff like that, and basically just ooh-ah. And I was really impressed with the reception. So you gotta imagine, this is a room full of professionals, whether it's biologists, you know, with state associations. There was quite a few game wardens, you know, that would attend. You had a study, you know, Panthera, who does a lot of cougar research and a cougar study. You had students that were doing their master's and shit, doctor degrees and master degrees. There was a couple of gals there that were, I don't know, masters and doctors. I don't know which one's which, but way more schooling than I wanted to do. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know what year they're on, but they just like school. But I guess I'd like school too if I was studying cougars, mountain lions.
Yeah,
it'd probably keep me in school a little bit longer. But so like, just, and then of course you had some advocacy groups like Mountain Lion Foundation was there. So it was just a big room, and it was a lot of professionals, you know what I mean, networking professionals and stuff like that. We might have had, I think there was like 14 or 15 houndsmen, and some of them were there not from us or anything like that, but you know, they were just there from their studies, you know. Some, you know, I think there was a guy or two from California, there was a guy from Oklahoma, you know, working on the Florida panther studies or cougar studies or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
So it was good. It was the one thing I was really, that I reflected out of the best was, we are actually, I think, raising our image inside of the professional world. What our perception in that room was 15 years ago or 20 years ago or even 10 years ago. You know what I mean? Like, I can only estimate and guess, you know what I mean? And I've seen some things, and, you know, I've seen hounds. So houndsmen have all, I wanted to say that there are always these biologists who do recognize hounds that are in their houndsmen, which I call their houndsmen. So like, I know in Oregon, whenever they do a study, they'll say, "Hey, thank you, Ted Craddock," or whoever is the houndsman working on the study with them. And so that's always been kind of there. But it was very obvious that people were happy that houndsmen were in the room. Like, I can tell you,
that's great.
We were well received, very well received. They were almost, I don't want to say excited, but they're excited that we were engaging in this discussion about mountain lions and you know, the conservation efforts and, you know, I'll say protection, because you get into different language that means different things to different people, but conservation is probably the safest word to say, hey, we want to be a part of the equation in lion conservation. So,
yeah, I mean, you definitely have to have a seat at the table too, just to get your, I think that's the thing that's coming to the light that I would say that probably 15 years ago wouldn't be as much of a reality, is that these things are something that, you know, can be lost. And the people that, I think that looking at houndsmen, you're starting to see, or at least people outside of that have been outside of that tradition are starting to see just how knowledgeable they are, and you know, just the kind of woodsmen they are as well. Yeah. You know, like I think some of the best woodsmen and best hunters that I've come across have been houndsmen. You know, there's just so many things that they have to be perceptive of and be aware of. And I think it's cool too that whenever somebody's out hound hunting, it's like you'll tree something and your hunt's not over. It's not like everything just like drops and you're just worried about packing something out now. And I don't know. I think it's cool that they're being received that way. And it seems like it's an easy step for biologists and people that would have exposure to houndsmen to be really excited that they're there and take a lot of have a lot of takeaways from them. I wonder how that translates into whenever you have some sort of legislation being passed, or like, you know, these, you know, meetings of the fish and game, or the, you know, conservation heads of different states.
I think the absolutely. I think that is a big thing of just having and just knowing the names of the people to connect with. You know what I mean? So like sometimes just learning who's in the room, you know what I mean, and knowing, and I'll talk about something else too. And even in the Mountain Lion Foundation, the discussions that they wanted to talk to us, you know what I mean? Like, so we had a panel at one point during this forum, right? This workshop. And so they asked if we could get a couple of houndsmen together. And we had houndsmen, and we had so Bart George, me, Greg Jones, I can't think of the other houndsman's name. He was out of Oklahoma. He was really good spoken. And then we asked a biologist, and I'm blanking on her name too. I was actually trying to look it up. But she had a little video that she did on a podcast a while ago where she was talking about the houndsman, and just kind of like what you were saying, like the expert of the houndsman and the expertise that they bring to the table, what they knew. Give me one second here. I will tell you who. Oh my gosh. And now I can't even think of her. I'm trying to look at my text messages during the show, but anyways, I cannot think of her name, but she's a biologist. She's in California now, but she was working out of Utah. And in the podcast, it wasn't even supposed to be a podcast, but it was more of, she was just talking about her as a biologist at first. And the houndsman would look at a track and go, oh, you know, this is a so-and-so track. It's this way. Well, you know, just all these little things that he was looking at and able to kind of determine what kind of lion they were looking at, right? And then she had just said that, you know, she kind of like blew him off, like, oh yeah, you're kind of impressed me. You know what I mean? Basically, she's this girl and whatever. And it's like, oh, this hound guy's just trying to impress her because she's the biologist. And so they get to the tree and it's like, oh wow, check. Wow, he did call this. You know what I mean? It was a female, it was a subadult, it was, you know what I mean, this way. And you know, so like all these little things that houndsmen pay attention to. And a lot of times we don't even realize that we're paying this much attention to things. You know what I mean? It just comes from being a woodsman and being natural and stuff like that. But so anyways, that was, I would look it up. I forget what it was like. The I should be prepared on these podcasts, but have you seen that clip I'm talking about?
I haven't.
I want to look it up. When I find it, I'll look it up. I don't want to.
Yeah. Anyways, I had that same kind of experience of just being blown away on, well, whenever we went up to BC on that hunt, that lynx hunt, just your and Stuart's ability to tell the tracks in the snow. I mean, like, for one, mm-hmm. I don't really come across all the different types of tracks, but two, like, being able to tell it in snow, like, we don't really get snow down here, so it's not something that I'm used to. I mean, at one point, we were on the snowmobiles or snow machines, and I mean, we were going fast, and the guide that I was with was like, that's not it, that's not it, that's not it. I mean, he was going, like, pretty regular and being able to tell what was going on, and it kind of, I think that was a moment to, that was kind of surreal, that woke me up to, hey, gum, these guys have built their lives just having the ability to just read simple things like that is crazy. Yeah. And two, like, I remember there was a time that you stuck behind, we got ahead, and we're like, where'd those guys go? And I think y'all had cut like a Wolverine track or something. Like, man, it's just cool to see that track there, you know? Like,
oh, that was under the bridge.
Yeah, you got your pant leg wet.
What in the hell is going? Yeah, I fell through the ice because I was looking something different. It was like something different. It was like it could have been a booby trap under there. They're like, yep, look, hot buddy, something unique was right there. Like, huh? That's not normal. I don't see those very often. So I went.
But just that attention to detail and your ability to perceive those things was kind of, I don't know. Yeah, it was really cool to be able to experience that and see just that specialization and just like knowing the thing that you're after and the other things that surround it.
See, and yeah, I mean, that's a really good example of something that I did that I had forgotten about. But when I seen that track, I was like, I want to go down there and look at it and dissect it. I want to see where that cat or that Wolverine went, you know, I mean, how it traveled through the woods and, you know, it was going underneath that bridge. And I wanted to see how it, you know, I was kind of looking at the brush and going, okay, it went around that log, you know, just little things like that, that I just log in my memory. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's interesting. I found that it was Dr. Julie Young, and it's called the Fair Chase Podcast. I'll send you this.
Hey, I just, I was just before this, I had a brief call with, James Zander off the Fair Chase Podcast. I'm supposed to be on one of those podcasts here coming up talking about bear hunting.
Yeah,
that was a good group of guys.
Uh huh. Yeah. So he and this little clip they made of Dr. Young or Julie Young or however you want to say it, she was just talking and they just took this little clip out of this podcast, and so I listened to it. I'll send you it, but it's the Fair Chase Podcast, February 20th. 2025. So yeah, it was just February 20th is when that one was one there. And then there was another one that was This Ain't Disney, Managing Lions with Dr. Riley, which is February 27th. So there's like a two part. So I think they went out and did some lion collaring it wasn't supposed to be a podcast, so it wasn't set up for audio. So it's not like the best audio, but the purpose of what they in just the context of what that was from a biologist, I just, you know, it resonated with me. And that's when we were talking with Bart, and I was like, hey, she was on the panel, you know, basically going like, she doesn't own dogs, but the whole panel was about working with dogs on lion studies. And, and so it was good. I at least got some positive feedback from, I felt like I talked too much on it sometimes, but you know, the point for me was, and I had one gal, you know, in the audience, she pretty much was like, well, and I'm trying to paraphrase what she said, but she was definitely not supportive of hounds in the room. And, her question was basically like, hey, like, you guys seem like all good people, but what about the bad apples? Or, you know, maybe like, we hear all about all these bad things that happen to dogs, you're with dogs and stuff. And, it was, and so I'd taken that question, 'cause it is a valid question, right? So as we're raising our image, we do have, you know, people who, you know, use dogs inappropriately or whatever for, you know, you get in these words like poaching or whatever like that. And it's very difficult. But what I basically said was, I said, here's the deal, man. A houndsman, you know, there's two ways of using the dogs. And I heard this isn't my words. This is years ago on Big Game Houndsman, but there's two kind of primary, motivations for using dogs, right? One is you're using the dog to get closer to the animal, right? So you can study it, so you can kill it, so you can, you know, take pictures of it, whatever it is, but you want to be closer to the animal that you're pursuing. So whether it's bear or cougar or bobcat, lynx, whatever it is, you're using the dog to get closer to the bear or the cougar or the bobcat. And I'm in a room full of scientists, and I said, most of you guys are in that group. You're using our dogs to get closer to the animal. And so there's people that do that for good. But I said, there's also people that can do that for bad. Like if they want to poach and kill a bunch of animals, you can use a dog and poach and kill a bunch of animals. Like they're a pretty efficient tool that can be used, just like any other tool in your toolbox. I said, but a true houndsman is using, so the other motivation for dogs would be to get closer to your dog, right? So, mm-hmm. So I use the dogs to get closer to my dogs. Now I like seeing cougars in trees. That's pretty, who doesn't like walking up to a tree? You know what I mean? Like when you see that, yeah, that lynx or whatever it is, that's a pretty cool moment, right?
Yeah.
And my guess is Colby, when you were walking into that tree, your eyes were up in the tree. You were looking at the cat, right?
When I don't know. I had a pretty tight connection with the pack. It was day four.
when we walked into that cat, most of the time
right
I'm
here.
Looking at where my pups are, whatever. I'm like, yeah, there's a cat. And I'm watching what that puppy's doing. I'm watching what this dog's doing. You know, I'm like, oh, that pup's starting to treat a little bit. You know, I'm keeping my eye on the cat. But most people, especially when they first walk to a tree, their eyes are glued on that tree. Like they are.
Yeah.
You can't take them. I mean, their eyes are so focused on the cat or whatever it is in the tree that it's like, oh, wow. Yeah. And when you look at the hound guy, they're over there petting their dog. And, you know what I mean? Like they're tending to the dog or whatever and watching that pup and, you know, petting your puppy or whatever. And so it's just two different clear motivations. And I told the room, I said, here's the deal. Like, it doesn't mean that you're bad because you want to use the dogs to get closer there. But a true houndsman, we're here for the dogs. You know what I mean? Like, like so you just got to be cautious. And I said, things can get abused. You know what I mean? Everything in the world can be abused. And we just have to make sure that we limit people that abuse dogs. I don't want to say abuse dogs, like whatever, but use dogs to damage wildlife populations. You know what I mean? Like if they're doing whatever. So, That was one of that was probably the toughest question in the room. And, it seemed, and I had a lot of people, we had a lot of people that, definitely supported the hounds and was like, yeah, every group has their own,
miscreants.
Yeah, exactly. And so, so they were, I felt, I don't want to say protected out of the room, but, I think that person, the big takeaway from that was that anti-hound person in the room who had a clear agenda and was trying to bring that agenda out inside that room. You know, everybody in the room knew her motivation. That was the eye-opening thing to her was everybody knew her motivation. And I don't even remember who it was. It was when I get in front of a crowd, I like go, blank stare, like I can't pay attention to who's asking. I just hear things. And I'm like, oh,
so fierce like, gaze, fierce gaze.
Where's the door? Where's the door? Like, I'm gonna get out of here. So like, I get hot, and I get all this. You know, so I couldn't tell you where that person or question came from, but I knew it was like that one's coming in hot. You know what I mean? When that question came, I was like, oh, that one's That one's got some motivation behind it. Like whenever they asked that question, I was like, oh yeah, you're going straight for the heart. You're trying to bring out the dirt. Basically they're trying to bring out the worst of the worst about hounds and the propaganda that they had seen And basically that's what I did. I just called it out. And
yeah,
in that room, it was really well received. And what I could feel was the room was not supportive of that stance.
That's
good. If that makes sense. You know, so
yeah,
most of the biologists, most of the college students, most of anybody that had any kind of recognition of working in a professional environment with a lion, minus the anti-hunters, you know, the advocacy groups, everybody that knew something about lions was like, nah, it's not, it was brushed over. So that told me a lot. Is like, hey, if you're educated in the topics, normally you're not, or I'll say normally, but we don't have as bad of a rep in these different game associations that I maybe thought we did.
Yeah. You know, I think I saw that kind of stuff play out as well in the Florida meetings that I went to. So they put out, they had three different meetings, like webinars or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I went to two of the three. And it's crazy the way the anti-hunters would be, like their solutions for everything are just crazy, you know. But the one thing that they kept saying, and I don't know why they were harping on this thing, was that they claimed that houndsmen leave their dogs behind all the time. And I was like, what kind of houndsman is going to just want to leave his dog behind? It's likely you captured it, turned off its collar, and just set it out free somewhere else.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, there's with almost with everything, there's a little bit of truth to, you know what I mean? Like, so if I look at that from an analytical perspective, it's like, yeah, there is a little bit of truth to that, Colby. Like back in the day, we would lose dogs mm-hmm. for days. You know what I mean? Not because we left them behind. You know what I mean?
So yeah.
Like anybody that left a dog behind, I don't, they were not in my circle of people that, you know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
The first bear that I seen in a tree, I was on a timber permit. This was, you know, 20 years ago or whatever. It was a long, long time ago. And the bear jumped, and I mean, it just strung dogs out of canyon that like 3 days I was looking for dogs in these big ass rough canyons, you know, so every morning we'd get up and I'd hike down to the bottom, calling dogs, losing my voice, you know, using the beep, beep. Mm-hmm. This was before Garmin, and it was no joke. I mean, it was like every day. And so, you know, I imagine, I don't know what day it was, but I imagine it was Saturday, right, that we lost the dogs. So I'm out there Sunday. I'm out there Monday. I think by Tuesday I had to go to work. So as soon as work was over, I'd get out early and bomb up there. You know what I mean? And it was really impactful. You know what I mean? Like when you lost dogs, it was a pretty impactful disruptive situation that you had to deal with, because
yeah,
you're like, oh yeah, like we're so blessed now that for the most part I can get my dogs back, so I can go out. I mean, shoot, I went out Sunday night. I guess I'm my own boss, so if I don't show up, I did send a text going, hey, I might not be in Monday morning, so I maybe have a little bit more freedom now than I used to. But it used to be like, oh yeah, you're not going to go out Sunday night. You know what I mean? Like you can't just go drop dogs Sunday night before, you know, go hunt for 2 hours before light. Whereas now I'd be like, oh yeah, I can run out there really quick and go hunt that Sunday night. Cause I know at least Garmin will show me where to go to get my dogs. And there's a good chance that I'll get my dogs back. Mm-hmm. And so, James is blowing me up here.
Come on, James.
If I don't text him back, he's gonna start texting my wife. Be like, hey, where's Buddy? I'm like, huh? That was one time my wife was like, you just need to answer James right now. Anyways, I'm exaggerating. He's not that bad. But yeah. Anyways, he did text my wife one time asking for me, and I was like, okay, don't mess around with James. He will go straight to the source.
Smart man.
Yeah. But anyways,
I mean, we used to do the same thing when we were hog hunting down in Texas, you know, like we had the beep beep collars and, you know, do the old trick of putting the jacket out.
Yeah.
And then the next morning we came back and the dog was there, but there was no way to get to him, you know, before then. Luckily we were going out the next day, and so it was like part of our morning.
Yeah. But, yeah. So like I can see where somebody takes that and then spins it and he goes, oh yeah, they just leave their dogs out. They don't care about them. It's like, no, you weren't with me staying up till 10, 11 o'clock at night and then going home for 3 hours and then getting up at 4 a.m. and driving back up to the mountain to be at that head of that canyon at first light, you know what I mean? With no sleep and then hiking again down and up and, you know, trying to figure out what ravine to crawl into to try to shout or yell, or hopefully you can get your dogs to hear you, or, you know, all these little things that you were doing to try to, you know, shooting guns. And you're like, well, I bet you might hear a gun. So, mm-hmm. you know, man, you just shoot ammo up at the top of a road or a ridge trying to get them to come out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just so I can see where somebody would take that little thing and they run across a dog that has been out for a day or two and,
yeah.
And being like, oh yeah, they just leave their dogs. And it's like, man, for the most part, that's gone. Like that doesn't happen hardly at all. I'm not saying that something doesn't happen where you can't have those situations, or, you know, a caller fails or whatever.
Yeah.
But we just don't, like, so I'm kind of, when I hear that, I'm like, yeah, it brings back bad memories. Like, yeah, there was a time, but it wasn't that we left them. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
they spin it. So that's like, oh yeah, you left the dog out. It's like, no, like shit happens.
Yeah. Yeah. No.
So anyways, but so to wrap it up with that, that mountain lion, workshop was, my goal was to, I don't say humanize, because humanize is not the right word for dogs, and people will use that and say, oh, buddy's trying to make, you know, because the dogs aren't human.
Yeah.
But they are becoming more and more of our pets, if you know what I mean. So, like, there is an old school and a new school version of the houndsman. And so sometimes we really need to let those new school houndsmen who are bringing their dogs in their trucks and doing different things, you know, having a hound that is a little more like, I have to say, mine are sleeping in my house. You know what I mean? Like they're indoors and they got a pretty nice little kennel set up, and, you know, and one sleeps with my daughter. You know, she sometimes she's got all freaking 5 hounds in her bed. I've just learned that's the way it is. You know what I mean? But sometimes those things are not bad to let slip out in these different rooms and people. And so that we aren't all, you know, categorized as like, oh, we just, you know, the dogs are out in the kennels and they're just tools and they just come out to go hunt and they go back. There's nothing wrong with that. Like, absolutely. That's the way it's been done for years and years. But the rest of the world has taken their dogs and made them more fluffy or whatever, you know what I mean? Bird dogs, you name it, whatever type of Labradors, duck hunters, bird hunters, you look at all the different types of hunting dogs and all of those dogs, the dog has become more part of the family in society. And that is true with hounds too. Our hounds, my hounds are part of my daily routine. Like we get up, we feed them, we go to bed, we pet them, we interact them. That's why I like them in my house, is because I can just go down there and give them a little head scratch or whatever and go sit there, you know, especially after we catch a cat or something like that, man. Mm-hmm. You know, that like they're all tired and stuff, and I go sit there and lay down with them and just pet them. And I know, or at least to me, I'm like, this is me telling you, good job. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You did a good job tonight or whatever it is. I get to spend time with them. So that's, you know, that was my motivation, was like, hey, we need to figure out how to break that ice, to be like, hey, just because these people are showing up these commission meetings and they're spewing all these lies and they're saying how we don't take care of the dogs and all we care about is killing the cougars or curing the game, and we're just ruthless and it's unethical, and they use all these terms, you know, trophy hunting, you name it. They, and my goal is to go like, hey, none of that's true. And I'm not saying that you can't find a bad example. Like, I'm not saying that you can't go out and find that and paint that, but don't paint the whole people that, you know, don't paint all houndsmen that, because that's not, as a general rule, I said, the people that I hang out with, furthest from, I think, from the truth. You know what I mean? If that's what, if that's the way they were, I said, I don't think I'd enjoy that. Like, I, that wouldn't be my cup of tea. I wouldn't be doing this. So,
yeah. And they kept on bringing up that all the, you know, that big group of poachers from years ago too, you know, and that's one of the things of like, if one houndsman gets out of line, it's going to make the, it's going to be reminded, you know, time and time again.
It's, that is.
But that's true with everything. Like, the bad example is going to be the one that keeps on getting brought up.
They will use the worst images they can find, because they have an agenda. And so they're going to use, and that's really what I cringe about is, you know, videos and stuff on social media. You know what I mean? Like, that's the one thing where I'm like, oh, that.
Yeah.
Because I know that they're going to take those videos and they're going to spin them. And, you know, that's the hard, that's a hard one to argue sometimes when they're playing off of emotion, because it is an emotional thing. And so what I'm learning is the professionals aren't our enemies. You know what I mean? Like, they understand, they actually support the dogs. They, for the most part, not all of them, but for the most part, those professionals do value a good hound and a good houndsman. You know what I mean? Like, they cannot do their job without those two things for the most part. The way the antis are getting steam is they're going to the uneducated folks and they're showing them emotional videos and they're getting these lies impregnated into their psyche, so that when those people meet me, they're like, you're not what I expected. Like, I expected this barbarian with a you know what I mean? Like, and I'm like, well, that's because you're listening to the wrong, you know, people with an agenda. You know what I mean? Like, that's not who we are. And so that's the biggest thing in the room is and there's just this void that's been there for so long that they've been okay filling that void and filling people's minds with lies, basically, or the worst case examples, and, you know, and then try to paint everybody with that example. And it's like, oh yeah, no, that's not how it is. So anyways.
Yeah. It's an easy sell too. I mean, like,
some people it is.
Yeah.
So, what's been going on with you?
Oh man. Well, I'm in the process of building a new rifle. Hopefully I'll have it tuned in by Spring Bear. So I'm planning on going out to.
What are you building?
I got a Begara action and barrel. So it's one of their cure carbon barrels with the raw stainless action in 6.5 PRC. And I dropped it in a MDT, one of their Hunt 26 chassis. So it's their carbon magnesium chassis with the foldable stock. And then a Trigger Tech trigger, one of their diamonds. And then, which I gotta tune that thing up. Like, it's a little too light. I'm anticipating it going off just breathing on it. and then a Vortex razor on top. So it's a pretty sweet gun. I think all in all, suppressor and all, I think I'm a little over 9 pounds. So super lightweight. And I don't know. It's the first time I've ever tried to build a gun. And so I'm learning it's not as easy as 1, 2, 3. Like, gotta spend some time with it.
Yeah, I haven't built one. James has built, I don't say built, but assembled. He built our PRCs. Me and Bradley have 7 PRCs that. I pretty much, like, 2 years ago told my wife, I said, I want a new hunting rifle. Mostly because I've for 20 years I've hunted with the 300 Remington Ultramag, and it's like an abusive girlfriend. Like, highly abusive girlfriend. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, you keep going back, even though she beats you every time. You like it. But after the beating, there's just something really good at the end of it. Cause you're like, oh, it's dead. I got it. You know, like,
yeah,
it just flat knocks you out. But then you get over there and you get this really big high. Cause you're like, oh, look at that. Look what I killed. Yeah. So it's like, you know, it's just this loop that goes back and, you know, up and down. Anyways. So I told my wife, I said, I want to get a lighter gun because it was so heavy and more accurate. And anyways, that led to another gun that James had a good deal on a 25 Creedmoor. And so I'm going to, we put that together and he got that all dialed in, and me and Bradley are going to do a couple of those NRL shoots this year.
Man, so, those are growing. I keep hearing more and more people shooting those.
Yeah, I haven't done it yet, but we're signed up for three of them. And then a local match. Basically, James is going to try to show me the ropes or whatever on that local match. And then we're going to jump into the NRL matches. And I have no doubt. I have zero doubts that I'm just going to get smoked. Like,
Bradley's going to beat you for sure.
Oh yeah, I'm sure, because he's in youth, and so he can have a mentor. And so James is gonna probably mentor him, so he's gonna be like shooting, and then I'm gonna be left out for the weeds. I have no doubts
that you're gonna be left for the wolves too.
Yeah. You can sign up on those. You can sign up for skills. You know, so if I signed up for skills, I don't think you gotta walk the prize table or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, there's rules, but then you can have somebody that can help you and yeah, you can talk and all that. And I'm like, nope, we're going to the deep end. we're gonna do this.
Yeah. Now, what kind of skills do you know what the NRL skills are?
I'm probably not the best person to ask, but I've read a little bit. It's and again, I'm like, in my head, I'm like, what do I practice or whatever? So basically, it's like finding the targets. You see, I don't think you can do your dope ahead of time. So you'll as I understand it, and it'd be a good podcast after the first one where I'm like, yep, that was wrong. Yeah. That was wrong. That was, I'll tell you, everything is wrong. Like, but you use your Kestrel, which is this box that measures wind and ballistics and all that. And so you kind of figure out what your dope is, what your adjustments that you would make in your scope for different distances. So like 200 yards, you know, 253, whatever it is. And so then you get on the stage. So you don't know where your targets are and you have 4 minutes. So you pretty much have to go, okay, like 4 minutes, you got to glass them, range the targets. So I think there's like four targets out there. They'll be like, oh, there's four, I don't know, antelope, you know, shoot them left to right. And so you got 4 minutes. You got to go try and find these steel targets, you know, range them, remember what your dope is. You know what I mean? So it's like, okay, there's one at 400 yards. So you want to be 2 point something mils or whatever it is you calculate that your bullet drop is for that time. And then you try to shoot them. And if you hit them the first time, you get 2 points, and you hit them the set, you know, you get two tries. I think the first shot's worth 2 points and the second shot's worth 1 point.
Yeah.
And then after that, and so that's it. And it sounds, it's interesting. The first time I did a mock-up with James over at his house, he's like, okay, shoot two shots at this target over here and then move over there and shoot two shots there. And I shot all four from the same spot. And I'm like, oh yeah. He goes, what about moving? I'm like, oh, because there's something about that clock, that time, that just adds this incredible pressure that it's all simulation, so it's not hunting. You know what I mean? By no means is it like hunting, but it does add this sense of pressure to your situation that is active in hunting. You know what I mean? So when you see a deer and it's walking, you're like, oh crap, you know what I mean? I got to get it before it gets to that tree line or whatever it is. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You don't have all the time in the world. Sometimes you do. You just sit out feeding or whatever. But there is that that value of, okay. And just talking like James, or whatever, he's like, yeah, you sometimes you only find two targets and you got to just decide, all right, two targets are better than no targets. You know what I mean? It's like guys will waste their full four minutes looking for four targets and then be like, yep, time. And then you don't get shoot one. So it's like, you got to calculate and figure out, is it, I can find this target, you know, like, but I can't find the other targets. And so it's like, well, time to engage, you know what I mean? And so,
yeah,
I don't know. Like, it'll be interesting.
Yeah. So are you inside of these stages? Do you know if you are you shooting prone or off of a tripod or?
I don't know. Yeah. I think they just have, I think, and again, this is totally new to me, but I think they have a little flag there. You shoot off there. So there might be a log you can bench off of. There might be prone. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. They probably make these different. It's supposed to be like mimicking hunting. So like,
yeah,
if you're walking somewhere, it's like, there's where you see it. You know what I mean? Like, boom, you spot them right there. You have that environment to shoot from. However you do that is up to you, you know, and what you do. So I don't know. Like I said, I'm excited. Well, our first shoot, I think it's in 2 weeks
that we'll do. That's cool. And then, you have to tell me how it goes. It's cool that you let Bradley have his own gun and don't just go out there and be like, all right, I've shot this thing for years. You got to rum it up.
Yeah, exactly.
You got to shoot the whole NRL match with this Ultra Mag.
300 rum. The whole world. The whole NRL is like, you see that kid shooting that rum? His dad's abusive. He's like, boy, you need to have an abusive girl. Abusive gun. Abusive everything. Life lessons, man.
Yeah. Well, what you been up to? What's new?
That's
the NRL stuff.
Been the new thing is trying to get guns ready. So I had a 6.5 Bergara Creedmoor that I bought a couple of years ago just because I had a bunch of Cabela's points and so I was like, I wanted to shoot, you know, something that was just fun to shoot, but not, you know. Stuart always tells me I got to give him my man card and you're shooting the Creedmoors or whatever. I was like, oh, I never had one. So I had that gun. That's what we dropped in a chassis for Brad. So he's shooting that 6.5 Creedmoor and then learning to break it in, you know, cause James built the seven PRCs, my hunting guns, James built. And then he had that 25 Creedmoor that he pretty much built that thing too and did all the load development. He did all the shooting out of it. You know, he talked me through it. He told me what he was doing, but he did it. And then after that, I was like, dude, so now I'm at that itch where I'm like, I kind of want to do it myself. You know what I mean? I want to build a gun. So I did the 6.5 Bergara. I had me and Bradley shoot that out. So we would shoot the barrel until it stopped speeding up because a lot of, again, I am new, so don't, like, anybody's listening, don't, like, go learn yourself. Don't look at me and be like, oh, yeah, well, buddy said. Like, I'm just telling you, I'm just parroting what I've heard. But getting the chronographs, these new Garmin chronographs, you shoot on a new gun. And for years, I've just grabbed a gun off the shelf, buy a box of rounds, and go hunt. Like, that's it. You know, I'm like, oh, yeah, shoots one high and two, you know, touching or whatever it was. That's been my MO for that 300 rum is one would be about an inch and a half, 2 inches high, and then two would be right there tight near the bullseye. And I was like, that's good enough. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I had a 2-inch group and I was like, yep, that's dead. But now, you know, watching and seeing some of these other guys that are just like stacking hole inside hole inside hole. I mean, you look at some of these patterns and they're, you know, five shots in a half inch or a quarter an inch or, you know, the same hole. And as I understand how they're getting that is you got to break the gun in and then you got to find the right load for that gun and the barrel. And so we were doing that the last, I won't say a couple months with Brad's, that 6.5 Bergara, where we would shoot it And then we'd build a load. And so we built what they call a ladder load. And so we'd build, you know, 38 point something grains. And every two grains, we'd have 38.6 grains, 38.8 grains. So we do 10 rounds of 38.6 grains, and then 10 rounds of 38.8 grains, and 39 grains, and then 39.2 grains. So that every 10 rounds, it had a different amount of powder in it. Mm-hmm. And so after we shot the barrel enough that we watched the speed, you know, go, we would do that and change the, and figure out what load that we would use for it and stuff. So it's just been a big learning curve for me. Anyways, yeah. I totally boffled all that up. It's confusing enough not listening to me. I can tell you that right now.
did you try any different bullets, or did you know which one you wanted to start with?
We started with the 137 ELDXs, or not X's, ELDMs. Yeah, Hornady, yeah. ELDMs. Yeah. Match grade for that 6.5. So on the hunting rifles, what James did is he tried a bunch of different ones. You know what I mean? Yeah. So he's tried a bunch, but on the 6.5 Creedmoor, there's so much data out there that he pretty much lined me out in a space that was like, hey, this is a pretty easy path. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. like he's like, you'll find your nodes, you'll find your, you know, your spots where essentially all the powder kind of, you know, all your, you call it a ladder. So different powder loads, you'll find this little section where the bullet keeps the same speed through, you know, half of a grain of powder or whatever it is, you know, so that no matter in our situation, it's 41 grains, right? We found this 41 grains. So 39.8 and 41.1 or 41.2 and 41 all shoot roughly about the same speed. So it's like, it doesn't really matter if my reloader charge, you know, kicks out an extra grain or two, it's not really a big deal. I don't have to be like so precise. It's like, oh, if I get one extra, you know, 0.1 grains of powder, it's not like it's shooting any faster. It's still shooting the same speed. Yeah. So that was kind of a learning curve for us to learn that.
Yeah. You know? It sounds like a lot of fun. I mean, it sounds like what I'm learning is like trying to start from scratch and put it all together. Like there's hiccups that you come across, but I mean, these are the things that I wanted to learn. Like if you just, I've always just gotten them off the shelf or guns that my dad had already shot and they just worked. And, you know, hunting where I do here in the South, we don't really have a lot of far shots that I'm going to be taking. Like I could use any rifle and just about any, you know, round. And if I can hit it 100 yards or less, I'm pretty good to go. And, but traveling out west and seeing what those guys are doing, what you guys can do in the terrain, it just made it to where I wanted to push myself and just push myself to learn, because just pulling the gun out, shooting one round to make sure it's on, and then go killing a couple of deer and putting it back in the gun safe, I'm not really learning much. And that's kind of one of the things I want to do, is just get out and learn more about, you know, these things that I use regularly and the tools that I have.
Yeah. Yeah. That it's, you're talking about like a houndsman being a woodsman, you know? And that, I think that's true in some of the, I don't want to say Western, but I'm just going to say Western hunters, right? Guys that spend, you know, elk hunters, deer hunters, guys that spend a lot of time hunting, and have grown up in the woods, whether it's with hounds or not, right? But I grew up in Colorado and doing a lot of shooting and stuff like that with 22s and shotguns and blah, 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 blah. Never long range, never long distance. And so, but I do teaching my kids to hunt. I do realize that I skipped a big portion of their fundamentals as far as like not shooting enough 22, not shooting, you know what I mean? Not shooting enough, mm-hmm. even probably air guns and BB guns and stuff that I shot as a kid. What I've learned and reflected is I take so many things naturally that I probably built up before I was 15 or 16 you know, shooting little red, you know, Red Ryder BB red guns Ryder. or you know, boxes and boxes of 22s that, you know, I just built those habits or whatever that got me to be a proficient shooter quick. Mm-hmm. And
yeah,
when you're out hunting and stuff, it's like, oh, there's a deer. It's like, oh yeah. There's times where I'm like trying to get my boy to shoot a deer in the beginning. And I'm like, dude, what is your problem? Like, there's a deer right there. It's bedded down 140 yards. This is like a, you know, this is, they don't get any better than this. And he misses, or you know what I mean? Or whatever it is. I mean, there's just so many times I was just missing. And, you know, I think we went through three deer before we killed one. You know what I mean? And even the one we did kill, we missed the first time. You know what I mean? We missed it at like 60 yards and we had to smoke it at 320 and he dropped it. I mean, just dropped it at 320, which I was like, thank goodness. Finally, we can chalk that one down. I don't know. He's going to be tears up, but I have to take responsibility for that. You know what I mean? Like, that's not necessarily his fault. That's my fault for not instilling the fundamentals and the foundation in that shooting so that he was really comfortable. It's probably more than anything why I'm really excited about doing this NRL shoot is because just preparing for these, like going over to James, getting this gun dialed, he would shoot 120 rounds, you know what I mean, out of that 6.5. And he'd shoot this gun and that gun, you know what I mean, just different guns. And we've shot 200 rounds in the last 2 months, you know what I mean, at the bench, doing this ladder test, having to dial down and just really focus on putting bullet inside a bullet inside a bullet so that we could see what the load is. You know what I mean? And then, you know, we went, you know, this Sunday in the morning, I took the dogs out for a little bit in the morning and then he can drive. So at like 11, when it warmed up, he met me out there and we shot some steel, you know, and I dialed his gun at 1,000. I hit some steel at 1,000 and then we moved some, so, you know, a small target at like 260 and just getting him to shoot and just shoot. And just run through the mechanisms. And I'm watching him just instill those foundations, you know, at 16 that he could have had at 12 or 10. You know what I mean? Like, honestly, like I probably had these foundations a lot earlier because my dad was just like, here's a box of 22s and here's your, you know, at 5 years old, I got a 22. And I could just go out. We had property up in Colorado that we'd run around. And I'd go everywhere around there and I was shooting rocks and pinions and whatever I could find, you know, and I didn't do that for my son. You know what I mean? Like he's shot, but he's not just put in the time. And so this is really good for me and him to just put in the time and watch. He's just grown as a shooter. Like we killed a deer last season and he just dropped it. We shot the sheep, you know, we went to Hawaii.
Down Hawaii, yeah.
Yeah, and we got that sheep. And just watching him just nail it. And I mean, just drive that bullet exactly where he shot it. And I'm like, where was this shit 4 years ago? He was just, you know, like these little things. And again, like I pick on him, you know, but that's my fault. So like that's the awesome part about it is watching him actually shoot now. And it's like, oh, he can actually, you know, whatever it is, you know, a couple hundred rounds of shooting makes a big difference.
Yeah. So. I think I've got a lot of guns that I've hunted with over the years. I'm pretty sure I don't even have 100 rounds down my first rifle.
I'm positive. I'm positive my rum is still not broken in. You know what I mean? Like I cannot handle that gal anymore. I don't know if I'll ever shoot it again. But
yeah,
absolutely. Like I'm just like you, Colby. I am positive that I have guns that I never even broke in. And I even knew that you'd break them in. You know what I mean? Like the biggest thing that I've learned is, and I'll say biggest, but when you shoot a gun, it speeds up. You know what I mean? So, so every time you shoot that gun, for a while in the beginning, when you buy a brand new gun, you know, brand new barrel, and that bullet travels through that barrel, it smooths out the barrel. You know what I mean? And so every time you shoot it, it smooths that barrel out and it goes faster and it smooths the barrel out. So it just keeps going faster and faster and faster. And those bullets go faster and faster and faster. You know, so And generally, you know, between 120 and 180 rounds is what it takes. And then at some point, the bullet is just polished enough on the inside that it is what it is. That's the speed that bullet's going to go out. And so, you know, it makes sense because, you know, I'd be sighting in and then my sights, you know, would go higher and higher. You know what I mean? The bullet would come out faster. And so I'd get elevation. You got to dial it down. And you're like, man, why? This thing was dead on last year. You know what I mean? So like those little things that you don't even pay attention to, you know, and with the new Garmin Chrono and stuff like that, you can actually see it where it's like after a while you start here. And I think the 6.5 Bergara sped up like 120 feet per second, you know, 150, wow, somewhere in there. But
it's quite a bit.
Yeah. If you do your dope, you know, at 1,000 yards, I mean, that's 12. I'm guessing, but you know, 12 inches, I can, it's significant. You know what I mean? When you're talking about, you know, even at 300, 400, 500 yards, it's a significant change that, yeah, you're probably still going to kill the animal. You know what I mean? But you're going to hit it high, or, you know, typically you're going to hit it high because the bullet's going faster. It's going to stay higher longer or whatever. So now you're like, oh yeah, I wonder why I hit that in the back. You know what I mean? I hit that one high. You know, well, that would make sense. You know, I mean, you're shooting a gun that when you sighted it in, now it's going higher. And I don't know.
Yeah.
But at the same time, there's still a big part of me that's like just the cowboy. Just like, yeah, grab the gun. Let's go.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. Like I'm building this, you know, long gun, but I just got a 400 Legend in just to break barrel one of the CVA Scouts. And on that one, I'm just going to put a dot. And so it's like I'm building this one that I want to shoot way far off. And then I'm building one that I just want to be real simple. Just pick it up and just walk through the woods and get something, you know, 50 yards or less, you know. Uh-huh. And just because it's like I do want that simplicity around here.
I have a 45-70, and I've shot it like twice. At a pop can in the backyard, and that pop can just flew. I mean, it was fun. It was, and I really want to shoot something with it, but every time I go with a scoped gun, like, I don't know, it's the same thing. I'm like, man, I have a 30-30. I got these in with the W logo. So if you've been here for 5 years, I try to get them a gun, you know, it's my 5 year anniversary. So, I think on our first five, I did a 30-30 for Matt, and I had a logo, and then we did 45-70s on 1 year. So another five years. So I don't know. Same thing. You get these new guns or whatever, and it's like, there's at some point there's too many to shoot.
Yeah. I think I'm about to start going backwards and just go through the guns that I've always had. Just, you know, get triggers worked on and do the things that just to get them where I would want to shoot them. And one of the biggest things is I've started shooting suppressed. And so I'm going to go back and get a lot of barrels threaded.
And,
I don't like going without a suppressor anymore.
This year was the first year I saw suppressed, and it's nice. Mm-hmm. It is really like my deer and my elk were killed suppressed, and the moose I couldn't, because Canada, you can't be suppressed up there.
Yeah.
Now it's, I don't like the look of suppressed. You know, I don't like the attention of suppressed, but I do like the sound of it now. I'm making mold or something.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, I shot a buck this last year, and the doe still hung out for a while, and it was only, it's funny. I've got this long range gun. It's a 7 PRC. It's a Seekins Precision. Yeah. And I was ready to just shoot the, you know, as far as the eye could see within the property boundary. Like, I was ready, and they came out at like, it was probably like 85 yards, and it was a doe, and this buck come up, and it was the opening day of rifle season. Buck come up right in front of her, and I shot him, and she just stood there. And one thing that I've been told is that suppressor, like, obviously you still hear it, but it, they say that it makes it to where you can't tell where it comes from. And I feel like that doe had no idea what was going on. Like, she heard a sound, but she was like,
yeah.
So,
yeah, I've heard that, and I don't know enough. Like, my elk was like 20 yards, like 25 yards over the timber. So it was like, I have this badass long gun. You know what I mean? It was a 7 years to it.
Yeah.
Like they walked right to me, like in the brush. I could see them moving through, and you know, the cow came right out there, and I'm right behind this log, just sitting there on this little knob in the timber. And they, I mean, they walked and turned and just broadsided right in front of me, but they didn't run off. You know, I shot, and same thing, like those elk. Eventually they trotted off, you know what I mean? They eventually figured out something wasn't right, but they probably smelled the gunpowder, but because I was that close. But it was surreal having that close and shooting. And then Mike was only like 300-400 yards away. And normally he's been hunting with me for 20 years. So whenever you hear the rum go off, you know, it's like, oh, look, there's Buddy. You know what I mean? And, he's like, dude, that sounded like a pistol in here. And he's 300, you know, he's in the same draw. And he's like, it sounded like a pistol shot in here. It just sounded like a little pop, just. Mm-hmm. And so, that's been nice. Like I said, so I've been geeking out about guns a little bit more than normal and reloading and, yeah.
Yeah. Reloading's next on my list.
Yeah, that's another overwhelming topic, but it's not as bad as I thought it was going to be. I've been scared of reloading for years, essentially, just because it feels like it's overwhelming. But now that I've jumped into it, it's actually not. And again, I'm totally green, so it's like whatever. But I've managed to get in and with good mentors, just get in and reload the two rounds that I have, which is the 25 Creed and the 6.5 Creed. Cause you can't, I guess you could, but you can't just go out and build 300 or buy 300 rounds and expect them to shoot on these matches and stuff and want to know where your load is and all that kind of stuff. So that's the reason I've had to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So we should get James on. I don't even know if we talk more about guns on this hound podcast than probably should have. I'm like, oh, I wouldn't mind talking to like somebody that on reloading and doing that, but there's a ton of podcasts on that stuff too. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think there's practical things too for houndsmen. Like, I know guys that run hounds and reload, but for them, it seems like they're more focused on what bullet they want to use and what they've seen work. And then some guys, they really want one that has two holes and goes all the way through. But then you have a lot of guys that want a round that goes in, does a lot of damage, but doesn't blow through the bear just in case there's a hound behind them.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I've seen, you know, I've heard guys, you know, houndsmen reloading just for like, they want a specific projectile, and they might even want to slow down the round and do lighter loads to where it doesn't have as much.
I could see that with lions too. Like one of the guys that has to shoot quite a few lions on the ground, he wants, that's what he wants. I think he shoots 357 rifle. Mm-hmm. And that's what he likes, is he goes that I don't think it comes out. You know what I mean? He wants to go in, but he doesn't want to come out. You know, you don't want to shoot a dog. So I could see that.
Yeah. There's definitely a big difference between, like, we have a straight wall season now here in Arkansas, and so I've got a 350 Legend and now a 400 Legend. And I tried the subsonics on my 350 Legend. It was significantly slower. Once I get a chrono, I'll be able to, like, see the difference, but significantly slower, and you could just tell. It's almost like I could expect to see that bullet travel. It seemed like it was going so much slower than the regular round.
I've heard, yeah, you'll have to, we got a chrono headed your way.
Yeah. I'm really pumped about it.
Yeah. You'll get that. And it's fun to play with. I, like I said, I've been, using it to break in that 6.5 Brugar and then trying to set up. Once you set it up, you don't use it as much once you get the gun set up. But I'd be curious. I was, and again, I'm like new to all this, like suppressed and reloading and long range shooting. I'm green, so I don't whatever. But as I understand, the suppressed, even those slower bullets make it even quieter. So they were saying like a Colt 45, you suppress like a Colt 45 pistol, and it makes it a lot more quieter than a one that's traveling faster than the speed of sound or whatever. Whatever.
Breaking that sound barrier. Yeah, you'd lose that crack.
Yeah. You got to get a whole nother suppressor, because most of the suppressors that you have are 30 caliber, huh?
I know. I've got one that's a 8.6. That's it's made by Diligent Defense. They're a really, really great suppressor company out of Pennsylvania. It's a small shop. Mm-hmm. And it does the 8.6. It's just a little too small for my 400 Legend, but my 350 Legend, it works great. And
does it make it weighs about 9 ounces.
Yeah. Yeah, like, it's a lot quieter.
A lot quieter than your PRC?
Well, the PRC is about the same. It may be little. I mean, they're both breaking the sound barrier, just not by like the 350 is not as loud. It's not as like, you don't get the same crack, but it's similar.
I don't know. I just heard it makes me want to. I always just want to play. Try this, try that. So we'll see.
But that suppressor will handle up to a 338 Lupua Magnum, one of the 338 LMs, as far as pressure goes. And so I got a buddy that has one of those, and I'm kind of curious like how it handles that.
Yeah.
How loud it is.
But that's cool. Well, I don't know, half of it talking about. We talked about some mountain lion stuff in the beginning. Then we talked about guns.
Yeah,
we'll watch the audience just drop off. Like, we don't care about guns. This is long range shooting stuff. Yeah. Well, thanks, Colby. There have been a couple changes with Jason leaving. One of them is I got to start working like podcast stuff. So. Thank you for jumping on, because I've been
pleasure anytime.
One of the things I need to start doing is I need to start trying to record a podcast weekly. So if you're listening to this and you want to jump in with me, now here's the deal. I like doing this during my work hour. You know what I mean? Like, I don't like doing this at night. So and a lot of those people are like, I gotta work. I'm like, yeah, that's my problem. this is me working. So I want to do it during 7:30 to 3 o'clock Pacific Standard Time is my best time to do it, because it's really hard for me to schedule it at 5. You know, when I got to pick up my daughter from dance, or it's easier for me to tell the shop and be like, hey, I got to go record a podcast, and I still get paid for it. So I'm in a unique situation when I want to do it. But anyways, I wouldn't mind some guests. I have to start, topics, guests, these types of things that people want to hear about on this podcast. I need to engage a little bit more. I need to kind of bring myself out and talk a little bit on these different things. And unfortunately, it is my name on the wall. So sometimes I dive into guns. we're just going to talk about guns, because that's just what I'm doing right now on the weekend. I am still getting dogs out, and I should probably tell more stories about that.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.